Soul. It's great to be back this Wednesday evening. You're speaking to Cher Naidoo, and I'm keeping it real tonight. So tonight we've got some special guests coming through. You guys know them already, Aaron and Malden, sharing their success stories. Then we had a guest, a request from Donovan Munsami, all the way from the UK. What I said is that we want to keep it more structured. So I want to try and deep dive into some of the discussions, because I know there's been a lot of requests around starting a business, how do we get into the business, cash flow, people issues. But you know, there's just so much to discuss, and we can't actually do it in one session. But so I'm going to throw something at you guys, right? This, like I said, we unfiltered, we're keeping it real. I want to get into your deepest thoughts. So I'm going to give you guys each a scenario. You're going to tell me which one you're going to choose, okay? Because it's difficult just to talk from one point where we're selling a product, and you know, there's different types of businesses out there. So I'm going to paint possibly three business scenarios for you. You tell me which one you're comfortable with, and then we can get into the final details of that. Okay? So let's get into the scenario. So scenario one, guys, is you have a product which you want to take to market. The product has the potential to be exported as well. Okay, that's scenario one. Scenario two, you're offering a professional service, or you an artist that wants to grow his or her career. And scenario three is you have a unique idea that you want to take to market. So I want you to think about this, right? So now that you have this idea or product or service, what will be the first steps to starting your business? And we're going to start off with scenario... Okay, Melvin, so scenario two, right? So what would be your first steps? Let me just repeat that again. So scenario two is you offering a professional service, or you're an artist, okay? You're an artist that wants to grow his or her career. What is my first steps to starting a business, in your thought?
So I don't think the different scenarios will play any difference in the way I would approach it, because number one, you gotta be highly skilled at whatever you want to start. So if we take the artist example, this could be a makeup artist. We're talking about a musician. We're talking about a actual painter. So in that scenario, you would have to be highly skilled. You would have to bring some of your talent to the table, and you would have to almost be a standout from the crowd, because you do find artists, and if I put an example of makeup artists, you will find quite a few in the market. So what's going to differentiate you from all the others? So before even starting, I would check whether my skill sets me apart to be part of an organization or to start something on my own.
Awesome, guys. So Melvin's nominated you to take on scenario three, which is you're offering, you have a unique idea that you want to take to market. Now, often, you know, you might have a solution to a problem, and you haven't tested it before. You feel that you can, you know, make a success of it. And this is often the times that most young people fail, because they dream these big dreams and they don't actually do some of the, you know, the investigations behind it, and then they get disappointed and just quit. What would be your first steps that you would take?
So initially, you know, with ideas, as I mentioned on the previous call, was you know, the simplicity of things. I think people tend to complicate things more than it needs to be. And if you start to have something new, and you're saying, with regards to someone that tends to, how can I say, get their blinkers on and just focus on, I want to get rich, I want to do this, but they're not being practical. So you start off with impractical dreaming instead of starting with, you know, realistic goal making. So from that aspect, I think that is obviously a massive downfall, I would say, because a lot of people that want to start a businesses always start off with impractical dreaming instead of having a plan, being realistic, and working on that.
Okay, so Mr. Pillay, we've got you on now. So you are number one on the list.
Yes.
You have a product
yes.
that you want to take to market, but the product has a potential also to be exported. Okay. So from your thoughts, what would you say? What would you say that you would do? What would be your first steps?
I think the important thing is to find out your niche in whatever you want to do, is to find out where does the niche lie. Now, if you want to export, you need to find out that there is a market. Lots of people want to get into exporting. Lots of people want to get into importing. There's a whole lot of laws, firstly, that go with that. In order for people wanting to get the product cross border, firstly, you need to know whether your product can sell. You need to know whether you have the client that's going to buy from you mm-hmm. and going to pay you. So that is, for me, kind of important. Well, how can I say this? So the first thing you need to find out is that, listen, do you have a market, and can your product sell in that market?
Okay, perfect. So while we were talking, I've just given you a broad perspective or idea of what we were talking about in terms of that, in terms of the different scenarios, right? Now let's be more specific, right? Because we're going to get into a little bit more details. But in order for us to cater for all listeners, what we wanted to do is create a scenario for each possible type of business there is. So the one scenario we put forward to the guys was a scenario of a product that you have. You might be selling curry mixers, or you could be selling seals, you could be selling any type of product, and it has the potential to be exported, right? That's the one scenario that we've painted to the team. The second scenario we've painted to the team is saying, you might not have a product, but you could be selling yourself in terms of professional services. You could be a doctor, a counselor, a lawyer, you could be an artist, you could be a song artist, a music, you know, and painters, a painter, you know, so any type of artist. How do you take yourself to market? So how do you get into the market? How do you make a business out of your skill sets, right? And the last one we said is, you've got this great idea. You think that's going to change the world. You've got an idea, and you want to know whether you can take this idea to market. And will it become a success, or are you wasting your time? So that was our initial question to them, is how would you start the business, knowing that this is your scenario? The next question I have for them, which I've put to them before we played a jam, was to talk about how do we price. So I said to them, guys, think about a specific product, because we don't want to think about broader products. You know, we're talking products in general, but think about a specific product. It could be milk, you know, that you're selling, or you're a music artist. Think about that, and how do we get a pricing? How do we put pricing to that so that we don't overprice ourselves out in the market and we become competitive? So I'm going back to Meldon. He's chosen scenario two, which talks about a professional service or an artist. So Meldon is an artist today. What type of artist or professional services are you offering us today, Meldon?
Today, I'm a makeup artist.
You're a makeup artist.
Yeah.
Meldon, the makeup artist. Okay. And Aaron, what product or service are you selling? So you're going to be able to export a product. What is that product that you're exporting?
The support to your employment, your business. So you're a makeup artist, so I'll be doing the makeup.
The makeup.
So
yeah.
you're selling the makeup.
I'm selling the makeup.
Okay.
The brushes, the... whatever, what do you call it?
The actual lipsticks,
the
eyeliners.
Yeah.
The
what else? More, yeah. more stuff?
What else are you
contouring equipment and all of that.
Okay, Don, so we're leaving you with a new idea. Maybe you want to join in there and come up with something that's creative around makeup, you know, a makeup artist or something.
Around makeup.
I don't know, or maybe something new. Maybe it's a new, totally new idea. Maybe a robot that does makeup.
Something new in makeup.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe a new product.
Rooibos-based something for the UK. organic.
yeah. Okay, so think about it. I'm going to ask Melden in the meantime to go through his product or his professional service as a makeup artist. In the meantime, you think about the idea that you want to bring forward, your new innovative idea. And then we'll get through to you in terms of how do we price that, right? So Melden, your makeup artist, how do we price your service?
All right, so the way I would go about it is I would first check what is market related in terms of, because remember now, I'm starting off fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know what side of pricing am I up against.
Mm-hmm.
Am I doing the professional TV stars? Am I doing brides? Am I doing students on weekends? What type of market am I after? What's the affordability? When I get that pricing input, I then have to go back and check what's my input costs. So, am I using MAC and they're only going to pay me $50 and a MAC lipstick is about 350 Rand?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to make sense? So I want to use, or am I using the best products because I can fetch the best price? Ultimately, I want to come back to a margin number to say I need to do X amount of people to get X amount of income, knowing mm-hmm. that all your income gained is not profit.
Mm-hmm.
Your margin is where your profit is. Does that profit then allow me to supplement what I'm currently doing to leave that job? So to become an artist, if I was working, let's say South African Rand terms, let's say I was earning 5,000 Rands a month, after all my input costs, my travel, and people don't count input costs as travel, as your time, as your telephone calls,
mm-hmm.
I would input all those costs to come to a number to say, okay, to earn more than 5,000, or I'm so unhappy, I just want to break even. I just want to start my business and mm-hmm. I want to get exactly what I'm earning mm. salary-wise, mm-hmm. right? You could then work it back to a number of clients that you have to have. What's your input cost? What's the turnover? And it will get you to a number.
Okay, so sometimes you got to look at quantity in terms of hitting your numbers instead of trying to put too much pricing on the product itself or the service itself.
Yeah, and there again, I talk about the market that you're after.
Mm.
If you in the Sandton area, or if you, and I'm not saying only Sandton has the people who can afford it,
yeah.
but if you are also, if you are on the East Rand, there are people, you got to know your market. You got to know at what price point you can fetch that. You also don't want to outprice yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, if I go back to skill set, if you have a unique skill
mm.
that only your hands are as gifted to make somebody look as beautiful as they need to without surgery,
yeah.
right? You can command a price
mm.
mm-hmm.
because brides are going to pay for that. People that are going out are going to pay top dollar mm. because you know your
There's
business.
A demand. Yeah.
And you create a demand for your service.
Mm.
So until you're getting to that point, and a lot of that has to do with man hours. The more you practice, the more you do it, the better you get at your skill. And it's talked about, I think Donovan once talked about the 10,000 training hours.
Yes.
Now, once you've got to that number and you're getting, and you're really good at what you do, then it comes down to the product quality. Do you have unique products?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have something that when they're going out for some UV mm-hmm. sort of thing that mm-hmm. makes you stand out? Some mm-hmm. unique,
what's trending at the moment?
What's trending?
Yeah,
I know everybody likes to follow the
Kims.
Kardashians
the Kims,
and the
yeah.
Jenners
yeah.
and all of that.
The future first
so,
lady.
Yeah, exactly. So it's what's trending. What's your market? You
yeah.
got to know. And everybody, when you start your business, you got to attack a certain niche off the market, and that will determine your pricing.
So also you're talking about, instead of becoming a generalist, you're saying specialize, find your space and go after that, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's a process to get to that.
Okay.
You could move from just moving the numbers to break even to then becoming a specialist.
Okay.
But it just depends what you're after. Some people are just after numbers, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's no right or wrong way
mm-hmm.
to achieve a number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Aaron, your thoughts on your product? I see you're speaking about products already in your discussion.
So there is a demand because he's the artist now. Mm-hmm. So he's going to need the equipment because he cannot operate without the equipment. And I'm the one that's selling
the equipment
or the product. Let's go for the product. Mm. You know, so whatever the name is, it's got to be, like Meldon mentioned, he mentioned a market.
Yeah.
And I think that is key. Attack the market that you want. Know the market that you want. Mm. So if I want to go to the high-end market, which Meldon, let's paint this picture.
That's your customer, right?
So Meldon's in this high-end market, and I know that that's the market I want to get into. My pricing will obviously be high-ended.
All right.
Because I'm selling value.
Yeah.
I'm selling quality.
Yes.
Those are the things that would be your fundamentals in the product. You could bring the product in from China. And I've got nothing against China. But because you emphasize on quality, you've got a winner. You cannot bring something like, you know, you go to the China mall and it's going to break kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Your product has to stand by its name. So if you're bringing something in and, listen, you're normally buying this thing for 100 Rand. But now I can give it to you for 75 Rand. You're still saving the buyer 25 Rand.
Mm.
Okay. But the quality and the lifespan of your product versus the A-class product must be the same. So if you're talking about working hours, mm. if the A-class product is giving you 25 hours in the day, your product must be able to give 23 and a half hours, mm. at least. So there must be that very fair comparison in your quality of product. Or alternatively, you can try and go for apples for apples.
Mm-hmm.
In saying apples for apples, so a guy wants a Mercedes-Benz product.
Right.
Give him a Mercedes-Benz product. But can you save him on cost? Yes, you can. In this day and age, people are buying service because service is hard to get.
Yes.
Now, he's giving a service to his client.
Yeah.
I give him the service because if he needs the makeup, he needs the brushes, he needs foundations, whatever it is that he needs, if I can give it to him on time at a decent price, this man's gone.
Mm.
When he's strong, I get stronger.
Mm.
You understand?
Absolutely, yeah.
You're right. So the more clients he gets, the more product he's buying from me.
Right.
What happens to me is I start producing more. I start expanding more. And he's also doing the same. So it becomes a part of the process.
Partnership, yeah. as well.
Of the chain, I think, yeah.
Donovan, so you've got a creative idea, right?
So with regards to, you know, a product, and in terms of, you know, there's a lot of things going on about electronic products that, you know, either do improve your skin quality or something. So, you know, if you're talking about skin products related to beauty, to add more to the services that you know, the people that Meldon is targeting, if you added something that's a bit more niche to the market, as well as something that's new and innovative and trending. So it could be anything. It could be a face mask that does some new improvements. But because you already have the clientele that you're offering something to,
right.
I think adding that service to it, so it will help. But, you know, starting off something with the new product, I think with regards to putting this product to market, doing your market research, all of those things. I think the massive key thing with that for me is the belief. You need to believe in the product, believe in yourself before you can get anywhere with it. And having the confidence to do that. You know, there's a saying that goes, confidence is going after Moby Dick with a rowing boat and taking tartar sauce with you.
Sure.
You know, it personifies that mentality to know that I'm going to go for this. I believe in it. And this is when you believe in something and you want to put that across to other people, they will pick up that, you know what, this guy has what it takes to make this product work. Because I think, you know, when you go to buy a product from whichever, you know, if you went to, what's the store in South Africa, Edgar's or something, and you asked someone about a perfume or something, and, you know, if you could pick up from them that they don't have the sale technique to believe in that product or that perfume to say, you know what, this is what it'll do for you, and yet you'd get another person that puts across the belief in it, you would automatically want to be part of that.
So I
think it's imperative for people that are starting up businesses, if you want to do something. And yes, you need to be realistic as well, because, you know, thinking that you can start the next Apple up is going to be a lot harder than it is to start, you know, selling a face mask effectively. So in people like Jim Dyson that started his, you know, he worked for a company prior to moving on to his own and creating his own brand. But, you know, he had the belief that he had the mindset behind it, that knowing that he can improve lives by providing a product that was better than the rest and stood out from the rest with different technology. So yeah, belief for me is probably quite important.
Absolutely. So guys, my question was, I mean, we spoke a lot about products and pricing and the quality and so forth, but then Aaron, you also mentioned something around the service, right? So if you look at where the industry is going, and I think before, if you look at the older ways of doing business, was very product centric. So everything was around the product, who was the, you know, which was the cheapest, the best quality product, and everything was based on product. And then you looked at a lot of these organizations started to transform themselves into becoming a more customer centric business. So my question is it only focused, before I get into the next question, my just a curveball in terms of, should we be still focusing on product and being a product-based or product-centric business, or should we educate our listeners around changing the thinking and saying, don't go head-on on product and just product and pricing and packaging and quality, but also focus on the customer, which is becoming more customer-focused? Let me hear your thoughts on that, based on, obviously, the scenarios that I've given you.
So, with regard to that, I think, you know, going into the market, I think a lot of value to the service. Yes, you can do a job better, but why? And that's what questions people ask. Why you? Why should I go with you? Why should I do this with you? And I think this is the perfect opportunity where you could value your product or your services to come in either slightly below what the market rate is or exactly what the market rate is, so that you can give an opportunity or platform or foundation to build on. And then once that's built, so a typical example is like when we started this business, we needed people to believe in us, to give us an opportunity to start that up, to start that, you know, that ball rolling. So once the opportunity came, then we added an extreme amount of value to what they were getting, for what they were paying. And then that quantifies even better when you add your, you know, more price to that product or service what you're offering, because then it's justified behind it. Because if you sell a product and you say, you know what, here's this, Dyson again, here's this Dyson product, people are like, why should I even buy this? And then once they buy it, they realize, you know what, if there's an issue with this product, they take it back straight away. If there's this problem, you know, they're on the phone, they'll sort it out, an engineer comes out, all of those things.
It's a support, yeah.
Within the value-added services that come with the product, and within a few years, the price of the product quadrupled, and people are still buying it.
No, absolutely. Take as an example, I'm just saying, when you look at hotels, what separates a level 3 hotel to a 5-star hotel, you know? It's just, they all got toilets, they all got beds, but it's the service that comes. So, Melon, your thoughts on the whole customer-centric approach or product-centric, what is your thoughts on, from a services point of, professional services or artist point of view?
Look, to Donovan's point, I think irrespective of whether you have a product or just a service, I guess that when you're starting a business should be a major drive, because without the service, even in a product, because unless, again, you like the Apples or the Samsungs or one of those reputable names, people are not specifically just after your brand, right? If it's a Nike or a sneaker, people know then in that market sort of what they want. But if I know what I want, what's going to make me buy from a different store?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the service.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read all the top sales books, all the guys that could sell don't just sell to the buyer. Mm. They sell almost to the entire family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a major sales book I read. The author slips me now, but he was the number one car salesman in the USA. He actually had his own receptionist in a dealership okay. to manage his people.
Yeah.
Oh. And he says the difference is when a kid ran into a store, he would sell the car to the kid. Now, yes. most salespeople would ignore a child,
yes.
in a shop.
Yeah.
But once the kid says, "Oh, Dad, this guy told me this about this car," and starts getting your yeah. attention and your interest and your desire. And when you engage at that level, that's why service in any industry is critical.
Mm.
Even doctors, it's proven. Malcolm Gladwell wrote in his book that even doctors that talk to their clients in the US are less likely to be sued after a botched surgery. So service cannot be discounted, and service comes in different ways.
Mm-hmm. I think what we got to do, my take on this, right, is to go back, because in order for somebody to start a business, and that's what we're talking about,
yeah.
Empowering people, there's one critical thing that I've learned, which I also learned a little bit late in life, was the SWOT analysis. Okay. SWOT,
mm-hmm.
your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and your threats.
Yeah.
So if you sit down with that and write it down, and then under your strengths, write down what are your strengths.
Mm.
Write down what are your weaknesses. What are your opportunities? And who are your threats? What are your threats? So your threats could be, I'm going to give you an example, somebody else that's doing the same product as you.
All right.
Your ex-company that you work for.
Yeah.
Their oppositions. Because those are your threats, right? What opportunities you have? You have an opportunity that, listen, the company that you worked for, because now you want to leave that company to start your own business, that company that you worked for was not service orientated.
Mm.
They had bad attitudes, or the staff had bad attitude, or they just didn't give a damn, you know? Or the product that they got was inferior. So there's a whole load that you could bring out from there.
Right.
Then you go to your weaknesses. Check what are your weaknesses. What are the weaknesses in the market?
Mm.
Right? So I'm doing this backwards now.
No, absolutely.
And then do your strengths.
Yeah.
And when you start putting all that down, that actually is a mind map, or a, well, what they call this? This is, that's your garment on where you're going.
Your canvas.
Yeah. Because you know exactly who's fooling who.
Yes.
And you know what to do. So that is the basics for me.
So let me just jump onto Aaron's there. To build on that, in any management course, they're going to teach you the SWOT analysis, right? Mm. What's a good thing to do is your strength, first do it at a personal level. Do it on you individually and be real with what are your weaknesses. If you're not good at finance, you're just not good at finance.
Finance, yeah. Right.
That's, you know, then you're going to have to find somebody strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way I handle it is the two are internal, strengths and weaknesses, treat as internal, your opportunities and threats as external. That's in the market forces.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening outside of me?
Mm-hmm.
What's the opportunity outside of me? What's the threats? And then do one, like Aaron said, for your actual product. What's the strength of my product?
Mm-hmm.
What's the weakness?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I see a market that's an opportunity mm-hmm. and the threat? So I just split the two. To yeah. gauge how does my own personal ability
yeah.
mm-hmm.
match my product
mm-hmm. okay.
on strengths, and then build it from there as you're getting stronger.
Right.
Awesome.
I just to touch on, you know, obviously what Meldon said about, you know, having a SWOT analysis on both your personal and your product as well. But I think I just want to something similar to that with regards to how people price the products and how, you know, it people are very carried away by working out a margin where the product dictates if it went to market, you'd be making this amount of money. And you always get guys say, "Oh, you know what? I sold that and I made 2,000 rand on that, but I made 2,000." And yet, that is the variable cost just taken off the profit, the margin, and that's all they look at. But a lot of people, when they start their businesses, forget about the fixed costs. So fixed costs. You know, things that The prices never change, whether you sell 10 products or whether you sell 1,000 products. Those fixed costs are still there. And many people forget about including that into their calculations. So it's a misconception because you think, oh, I made two. Well, actually, you didn't. You didn't make 2,000 rand.
Yeah.
Because once you take all the fixed cost out of it, you know, your margin's a lot lower than you think it is, and then it's more realistic. So I think to bear that in mind when starting up something new, and obviously when pricing up a product, because you know you might look at your competitor and think, oh yeah, he's pricing the product at that. I can be more competitive and you know undercut him by this much to put my product to the market. Mm. But by doing that, you must bear in mind, you know, he's got his fixed cost calculated at you know a very precise amount, or he's managed to get them down massively, which enables him to price at that. If you undercut him, you might have the problem where you might undervalue the product or the service, and you know the product in moving on in the future won't be worth it because someone has come along. So we have a similar effect with services that we offer. You get someone come along and be like, you know what, I can deliver that for cheaper, and this is where the mm-hmm. value-added services come in, you know, providing an excellent service to a product. And when people are centered around pricing all the time, they think, oh, let's go with this, but then the service that doesn't come with it. But what happens then is that the guys that offer a really good service, you know, your product will stick at its value where it is, and these mm-hmm. guys that undercut it will fall away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won't be able to keep up eventually. So it is a very important to always focus on including those fixed costs when you're working out your margins. Yeah,
Donovan, just on that note, so we all started off right, and I'm sure when we came in with the pricing, at some point we went in to beat somebody's price.
Yep. Correct.
So there's a fine line there, because you could want to gain market.
Mm-hmm.
So what Donovan is saying is spot on in terms of when you have. But it must be part of your strategy.
Right.
If you know yes. you're going to go after this market at this mm-hmm. pricing, and then you're going to reset through mm-hmm. whichever means.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got means to reset. Mm-hmm. When you're gaining market, you could do that. If you got big investors behind you that's pumping money that wants you to just gain market share, you mm-hmm. could do that strategy. But it's very calculated, and you got to be very sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, based on what Malden is saying, it's so true, because a lot of people that are in business or going into a new business or starting up something new, you know, they don't do calculated risks. So when you've got a product and you know the direct route to market and you're going to make this kind of money from it, you know, having a buyer for a product before you've purchased the product is probably the best solution to any business.
What I want to get into is the compliance side of things. So we've got this idea. We sort of know what we're going to price it at, or we've got an idea of how to price it. In South Africa, I don't know in the UK, in South Africa, we've got a lot of informal businesses. You know, there's a huge struggle to formalize the economy right now.
So for when you mean informal, do you mean people non-registered? That don't pay taxes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, informal traders.
Okay. Informal traders. So my question okay. is to the team is, starting off your business, should we start off as informal businesses to test the market, or should we go and register the business, get it compliant in terms of the tax and CIPIC and all of that? What are your thoughts on it? Because right now there's a lot of listeners coming in and saying, you know what, let me just try this out. I don't want to get burned because, you know, now they're going to tax me and I don't even have money for myself, you know. So what do I do mm-hmm. starting off this business
mm-hmm.
because it's your first, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're running for a while, it's a different way you can plan your monies and mm-hmm. so forth, but brand new business. So I think the South African government's trying to get it formalized to try and get them fed into the bigger benefits that are out there, the departments are offering in terms of grants and so forth, but a lot of them want to still stay informal, right? So we are discussing the three scenarios where we're offering a service, as an artist or a product, or we coming up with a brand new idea. And I'm sure there's listeners that are out there that are saying, you know what, okay, I want to sell this stuff, but do I need to go and register this business? And what are your thoughts?
in terms of wanting to scale up your business and to be credible in the UK, it's 100% in your benefit to register.
Okay.
Because if you did it any other way, you know, going up to sell a product and telling the guy, "Oh, just pay it into my personal bank account," sort of thing, it doesn't go down well.
Professional,
yeah. Yeah. I think on this side, and depending on our listenership, it depends what size business and what you're aiming for in South Africa. So if you want to start off something really small, I would say that at least have your business registered, your name as an entity, because if you don't hit the tax bracket, if you don't have a certain annual turnover, you won't need to pay tax, but you need to do your submissions.
Yes.
Right? Which is always a good thing. It's always a good thing because you already set the platform for scaling your business. Mm-hmm. You don't want to run into a big contract and mm-hmm. then have to be finding
around, yeah.
and running around and getting registration. So mm-hmm. I think from the onset, if you were to, I think choosing a name is critical,
very important,
yeah. And making sure there's no trademark infringements, choosing a name that is unique, mm-hmm. That's, you know, in South Africa, we have the context where now we have the BEE dynamic and everybody wants to give a BEE name.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
To me, a name has to have a meaning.
Yes.
And so has to have some substance, yes. And what I found, and I've learned this from a Jewish friend, it's very good to align your company to something that's already big that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. When you knock on that first door, because you see, the way the human mind works, everything is perceived, right?
Perception, mm. yes.
Once you perceive that, and I'll give you our example. When we started, we put the name Orion out. Mm. There was a massive building coming past the airport.
Yes, Orion, I saw that, yeah.
See, you remember yes. it, right? Now, I don't know how many clients, when drove past there, like, yo, we saw your building.
Building, yes.
And so, when you align your name, you know, it must carry substance, and then when you're developing it, it must stand for something.
100%.
So your name, your registration, I would go with those, and you got to have some logo, because again, a lot in life is driven by perception.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be reality, mm-hmm. but when you present your card, mm-hmm. When you send your documents electronically now, many people don't like business cards,
yeah. mm-hmm.
your electronic documents, when it has a professional looking logo, a professional looking name, mm-hmm. you look professional.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it takes you even mentally,
mm-hmm.
When you sell, you feel good about yourself and you feel empowered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to add to that,
fake it till you make it.
Yes. So just to add to that, and what you said, perception is the biggest tool in any sales pitch. Perception. Unfortunately, because I'm not using this as an excuse, but because of the history of South Africa, if people see you coming into a market space, the first thing comes to their mind is that you are either operating from the boot of your car, you're operating from your house, or you know, you're some shady dealer.
Yeah.
Mm. So eradicate those thoughts. Now, my take on this, and this show is called Keeping It Real.
Mm.
I'm going to say something that's very real now.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to move with the big dogs, don't pee like a puppy.
There we go.
Okay. If you want to move with the big dogs, don't pee like a puppy. Mm. Give to Caesar what is due to Caesar.
Yeah.
100%. Now, you want to be the next Orion. If that's your game plan to be the next Orion, don't compete with Orion. Use them as a role model.
Mm.
Use that as a model. How did they do their business? What were the ethics? What were the ideals?
Yeah.
Try and use that to direct where you're going to.
Mm.
Okay? You'll never close a company like an Orion down. I'm just using your company as an example. You never close a company like an Orion because over time it has inertia. Right? So whether Meldon's in the company or whether he's not in the company will still survive.
Mm.
That is success.
Mm.
You don't want a company to just revolve around a Shan Naidu, a Donovan Moonsammy. So you don't want the company to revolve around one individual.
Mm.
you want that longevity. So start in the beginning and say, listen, what do I want out of this business? Mm. Do I just want to earn the salary that I earned as an employee? Then do that. Right? Or rather go back to work. It's actually cheaper to be working for a boss.
Yeah, I just want to share something. Just came to mind when he said that. When I was getting married, true story, we're keeping it real, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went to my mom and I said, Mom, this getting married in community of property, or how? What's your take? And she said, don't ever ask me that question. Because the mindset at which you start something, you don't think about you going to be a businessman and what if. You think of when I'm a businessman and I succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So this now, I'm just breaking a little bit away from business talk. I'm talking about now faith, and I'm talking about belief in what you do. The minute you have a crack in your armor, any sense of doubt, my mom told me straight, this is it. It's community of property or it's nothing. That's how it is. And I've always listened to business people when I went to talks about how to structure your marriage deals. And I'm saying, certain things, biblical-wise, it's foundational. It's fundamental. Mm-hmm. There's certain laws that apply to the world, like the law of gravity. It will never change.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Bible believer, there's certain faith principles, certain things that is outlined that faith should not be shaken.
Mm.
So what I love what Aaron said is when you're going to do something, have that positive mindset, because then it casts all doubt.
Mm-hmm.
It casts all fear out of your mind. Because if you go into something that's always half done, you always end up giving up. Because, but I knew this might happen, man. Mm-hmm. And now check. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw in the towel. I'm going to go back to my job.
Yeah.
But when you are focused, clinically focused, when you are determined, and most of the guys that really make it are the guys that don't have any safety net.
Yes.
Mm.
You know when you watch the trapeze act in the circus?
Mm-hmm.
The guys that don't have the net know that they can't miss a jump.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they will practice and practice because they're not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something that I want to share about mentality and having a positive mindset. Because even during this COVID period, even though you've started something, you could already be feeling like, nah, let me go back.
Mm-hmm.
And get a job or quitting or something. And a lot of success lies in mental strength.
Yes.
And I will refer Donovan to Jurgen Klopp when he calls the team mentality monsters.
Mm.
It means that you have the never give up.
Yes.
You don't have the best players like a Leicester when they won it.
Yes.
You don't have the best players, but you're giving your all all the time consistently.
Yes.
Day in, day out.
Yes.
You have to succeed.
Yes.
No, unfortunately, I have to agree with Meldon there.
Unfortunately.
The mentality
of Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know that 100%. You know, like I said when I started off the call, the belief and the confidence to do things. You know, if you don't have the belief in yourself to do something, you will fall short. You will, because it will come through. If, like Meldon said again, if there's a crack in your armor, that crack will spread, and you know it will just become something that won't succeed. So having that belief from the get-go, knowing that this is what I want to do, and give your all to it as well. People always give half-hearted attempts to things, and sometimes yes, you're lucky and it becomes a bit successful, but inevitably, you know, if you're not giving your all to give to something, and it won't do, you know, its full course, which it should do.
Yeah.
And likewise in other aspects of life as well, you know, with regards to your marriage, like Marlon said, you know, if you're not all in, then you've got doubts in your mind, then you shouldn't be in that situation. Because that's not right. You should be all in or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just to add on that, this was one of my beliefs, is that, when I started off my company, my business, I didn't even know what business was, to be honest with you. I knew how to do business, but I didn't know how to run my own business.
Mm.
And when I started this off, and I've got a few witnesses that will bear that, and I said, you know what, I'm treating this as a baby. The baby's got to crawl before it can walk and before it can run. After it runs, it can start doing the 200 meters, the 100 meters, whatever it wants to do after that. But in the initial stage of business, you got to bring this thing into reality. You got to give it an identity. Beside the name, you got to say, listen, what are you relatable to? The baby's going to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning for a feed. Your customer's going to call you at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I remember years back, Malden, when we used to have some church functions and used to be on your phone, working on a Sunday. And I'm not throwing Malden because, you know, we've also been there. But he's been arranging for this and he's been arranging for that and he's organizing the surgery needs this or the theater needs this and that. And I still asked you, I said, what the hell is going on? At functions, you were busy on your phone.
Yeah,
but you know, the driver to get to surgery with this medication and that thing hasn't gone to theater and whatever. So you treat it like a baby. It's going to cry. It's going to need a change. It's going to need this. It's going to need that. That's how you're going to look after this baby. It's a business. It's going to feed you. One day it's going to look after you. You know, back in the day, if you speak to older people, and they will tell you that the reason they had so many children was not because there was a lack of a TV, but because the children were supposed to look after them in the old age. That's the reality of the older Indian folk having so many children. It was, if they had 10 children, 5 out of the 10 would probably be the beneficial kids to the.
But I love Aaron's analogies. I must give it to him. The other thing is, timing is critical, because obviously if you're talking baby, you don't want no premature stuff. And so it comes with a lot of growing pains. And so, like a parent, you adapt. Your first kid, I remember, your first kid, you feel like you're going to die in the first week. Nobody told you how it's going to be. You're going to have tough times. And you're thinking, how did my mom and them do it? Or how did other people do it? And you got to have that ability to stick. And like you said, you must have this vision that you want to see this walk and run and get awards. You got to be able to see that.
Awesome, guys. So I have another question around how do we distinguish ourselves to our competitors? So we spoke about a lot about timing, spoke about the product. You have, from your side, you're talking about the makeup artists. And I've got to, in terms of service, is service the only way that I can distinguish myself against another makeup artist? Making products, is it the naming that I need to get right, or the pricing that makes me different? What are some of the secrets that we could add on that will give us a leading edge?
Well, you could be a makeup artist, but you could be talentless, so you are useless. Certain people are going to tell you you're good. How do you now gauge
where you
are or how good you are? You've got to put it into the market. And your self-worth or your self-identity will speak for itself. Like, I remember Donovan talking about, you know, he used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go sell vegetables. Okay? And thereafter, the ideas came into how he should now develop into a business. But it was an idea. He knew his strengths. He knew he can get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He knew that he could do that. Now, you want to be a makeup artist. You don't even know what MAC is. It doesn't make sense. You know what the problem is? And I've seen this with a lot of people, is that as soon as you get to that age, 35, 37, 40, 41, you've worked 20 years, you decide now, hey, I'm tired of this boss. I'm tired of working. I want to start my own business. And I speak for the Indian community, and I stand to be corrected. Majority of the guys, the first thing is, and I'm talking about guys from the generation before us, the first thing they want to do is open a takeaway. Okay? And the takeaway falls down. Because your wife's cooking is not tasty for everybody else.
That's true.
True that.
But you know what I'm saying? And then what happens is they take the pension monies, provident funds, invest it in there, and it doesn't work. Now, do what you think and you know. The key is know that you're good at. If Mel didn't have the experience of what he did for a boss, like that woman
sent a message when we were on the last time. You know, he volunteered to come work free or for free because he knew what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Listen, I want to learn. I don't have the money to go and study this, but I've got the time. I'll put my time in and get. Donovan got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go sell vegetables.
Yeah.
Now you see him driving a Ferrari. And you say, hey, listen, man, this dog's got a Ferrari. But people forget.
But with regards to this, I think a lot of people look, I call it, you know, like the iceberg effect, because people look at they only see the tip that sticks out of the water, and they just think, you know, this looks amazing. This is okay. I can handle this. But nobody looks what's underneath in terms of what goes with business. There's a lot of people like don't gain the experience of what they should do. And I always say that the best way to learn is on someone else's money. So in other words, if you're going to work in a job and learn and get the experience in an industry, not saying anything, no disrespect to people that work for me now, is that if they learn and they do start up a business on their own, you know, all credit to them. They've learned and they made the mistakes with somebody else's money effectively, or they've grown with that. And through that process, they know the do's and the don'ts when you're starting up your own business. So people that just jump into a business from the outside, that's not, you know, no knowledge of the industry or looking. I see this all the time because we work in logistics and we get competitors that come up all the time. But these guys are coming from, you know, all sorts of backgrounds, retail backgrounds, and some of them are like highly educated people in a different skill set, and yet they wanted to come in because they look at logistics and think, you know, I can do that. I can make that happen. But they don't have the knowledge and the experience that would get them into a comfortable position where they're making a success.
The last part, bit of advice to our listeners, because I think one of the key things we see with young people or even entrepreneurs, they quit quite easily, you know, so they've tried all of this, they've engaged with customers, they can't get that sale, or they got that first sale, and, you know, how do they, you know, that quitting attitude, because is business for everybody? Because they see the flair, they see the Ferraris, they see all of the wow effects, and now comes the hard work, and they try it, and then they say, this thing is not working, I don't make a sale, I quit. And that's what happens to a lot of people, is that we've got so many new businesses starting, and within the first 5 years, if you pass your business within the first 5 years, you'll become a success. I mean, at least the business will carry on. But most businesses, 80% of businesses, small businesses, fail before 5 years, in year one, actually. So what can we say to those startups? It's great to have the idea, you want to start this business, but what should they be prepared for?
I think at the beginning of the conversation, Malden and Don went into it. It's, you got to, in my nutshell, I'll say it like this. Know your cost, know your profitability. That is as simple as it can get. Do not make R100 and think that R100 belongs to you.
But also, I think you need to also tell them, because I think a lot of them says, probably think, you know, I start this business, I'm going to now take my salary out of this thing and not help it to build itself up. So that mentality of the first paycheck comes, there comes the
profit
in the car, you know, and they spend the money on the car.
There's two ways of doing it. Well, there's a few ways of doing this. Should you want to leave work, and I'll be putting this scenario in play, you want to leave work and you want to start your business. If you've got investors, then pull a salary because you're being funded. Right? Other people's money. If you've taken a bank loan or whatever the case is, hey, take a salary, do what you feel like doing. At the end of the day, you're still responsible to pay that loan back. Remember that. With interest.
Yeah.
The trick is, you know, Warren Buffett said, buy low, sell high. Simple principle. Simple principle. Buy low, sell high. So the thing is, in this whole scenario, it's about, can I cut my salary? Can I not take a salary? Can I not take a salary? Can I live? You know, everybody says when you're going to start a business, try and budget for 6 months of your salary. That used to be the old saying, right? For me, the take is this. Listen, can you survive for as long as possible? You eat. Obviously, you need to eat. You need to do a lot of things. You need children to go to school, all that stuff. But can you survive as long as possible? Do you need R1,000 to live? Or can you live with R300? And that is a trick. Because at the end of the day, your business needs to start looking after itself.
Mm.
And once it starts looking after itself, then it can look after you. Then you get the Ferraris. Then you get the things. And people do not realize that the sacrifices you've made.
Closing, guys. What's your closing statements to our listeners out there? What are some of your nuggets that you want to share? You guys got each 2 minutes, and then we've got to wrap it up.
So, so a few things, just a few pointers, really, in terms of, you know, when you started off a business, obviously have a detailed plan. You know, this must have an in-depth plan with your figures and how you have a plan to how you're going to put this to market, either the service or the product, and, you know, and look at other competitors that are doing this exact same thing or something similar. And probably learn from the challenges that, you know, they've experienced, or do some sort of market research that goes with it. Networking is massive as well before you start a business. I'm sure there's networking events in South Africa where, you know, you can go out, have a chat with a few people and get more inside information. It might be just general information, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there that are willing to talk to you about how they started up. Because once you engage with someone and you want to know their story, I'm sure they'll tell you a lot of truths to how they started and what they did and what, you know, what things not to do. A massive thing that I'm really, really big on is surround yourself with the right people. If you want to progress in any aspect of life, or, you know, you want to become a better person, I think surrounding yourself with the right people and people that bring out the best in you, is so key. It's so key, you know, because, you know, I have a lot of friends that they always say that, oh, you know, myself and Chris is my best friend, and we started this business together, and we bounce off each other so well that we, you know, a business was always inevitable that we're going to do this, because we, as a team, we work so well together, and we want the best for each other, and we both have, you know, the motivation to motivate the next person and not think about the greed for yourself, more about, you know, the bigger picture. So surrounding yourself with the right people, because sometimes people don't want to see success in you, and they would put doubt in your mind that you won't be able to succeed by doing a business. Because, you know, a lot of companies are out at the moment, when they came up with the idea, people thought, oh, he's crazy, how can he do that, you know that's unheard of.
Yeah,
this will never happen. And now these guys become conglomerates, you know, they're massive in the market just because they stuck at it and they believed in themselves and surrounded themselves with the right people. So yeah, and another thing is that, you know, with regards to what's trending, what's going on in the market, you want to stay ahead of the curve. This is also key, because a lot of people want to apply old things to a new market. You need to stay ahead of it. Either it comes with technology, with using, you know, if you use social media, you're using different routes of where people pay for a product. You know, having that simplicity and keeping up with the times is very key, because a lot of companies that still, you know, you go into them and be like, oh, we don't take check, we still take check payments, and you're like, what? You still take check payments, and, you know, keeping up with the times to do those type of thing. I spoke about this, my last point, on the previous call. You know, there's, I compared it to I call it analogy, but not as good as Aaron's. But you know, there's five aspects in your life with regards to different things, which is your social life, you know, your spiritual life, your friendships, and your physical and your business life. And finding a balance between all of those things is very, very key. When you tend to add too much of your time and effort to one aspect, the other aspects will, you know, be neglected and will affect your business massively. Because if you ignore your spiritual life or your social life or your relationship with your children and your wife, in the long run, those things will carry on, and it will eventually destroy your business life.